Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
Seeing my family on TV, seeing them sing, a bit teary. Yeah, nothing but love.
I have no regrets.
The people from the bush are real people. They're just wonderful people.
At a certain time of the afternoon, all these galahs come past and it's just beautiful.
If you've got time, pay Ningen a visit. Like, it's a great spot and we'd love to see you.
Yes. But Warren, it's just home. It's a beautiful little town.
I love Canambook. I'm here.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
This is Outback Out Loud Canambook.
From the local Aboriginal Land Council on Castlereagh Street, sisters Flo, Jenny and Vivian tell us about their lives.
My name's Florence King, maiden name Hall.
I'm Jenny Hall and I'm Vivian Hall, so we're all sisters.
We've got a sister between Jenny and I.
Passed away last year.
And the two brothers.
Yeah. I came here when I was 12. We had a hard life. My father had two jobs. Mother couldn't have a job because she had six of us. When we were down the reserve, we weren't allowed to come out of our little yard because she was fighting someone taking us. So it was like that. It was very tough for my mum and my dad and us.
Actually, me and my two brothers are very lucky because the three eldest ones, they had it tough. Dad was a shearer. And so with that came the drinking and, you know, the alcohol. And so these three girls, all of that.
We came into that when my dad, like my sister said, he was a shearer. He worked hard. And we worked hard because we lived in an auto tent. There were six of us and mum and dad. Marquee tent, I suppose it's called, but they called it auto tent. It was a big one, eh?
Square one. So tell the story around that tent. So this is the old camping ground.
Yes.
They now call it Tin Town. The people that lived down there never called it Tin Town. It's just that after it was all closed down, they
started calling it
Tin Town. But they all lived in a tent. So no Aboriginal people lived in the town?
We had to cut water from the river, dig a hole in the ground between Jenny, Judy and I. No running water was there. I had to go to work. Jenny and Judy had to go to school. Then when we go to school, it was funny, because when we used to go to school, it was a gully. And the three sisters would walk together, and we had two white boys throwing stones at us. So that's how hard we had it. So with me working, then I started nursing. Then I had to fight to get my little place into that hospital up here. Then when Jenny came, I made it easier for her because I spoke up for her.
So this is where I always say I'm very lucky, because these guys made the path for me and my two brothers and made it easy. They worked back in the day. You could not see one Aboriginal person in a shop here, you know, and yet here we are, and like Lucy, we had about four Aboriginal women nursing, and they were good nurses.
Yeah, I started when I was 16 and a half nursing, because I said to my mother, you can't afford me. I left school first up when I was 15. I big noted myself and said, I can do this, but I couldn't. So I had to go back to school. Turned 16, and then I left again. And then when I was 17, I started nursing. There was this big nurse that I had to work under. And she was the most cruel lady I ever known. Never had kids, she was a cocky, they call, owned station owners and all that stuff. And she was one of those ones that say, you do this and you do that. So I done her work, I done my work, I done everybody else's work that she made me do. But when Jenny started, I made it easy for her, but then again I made Jenny shame. And I said, don't you effing use my sister like you effing use me. And the doctors over there said, who's that lady? They said, oh, that's Flo Wall. And the matron said, what she's saying there is true. everything went well for so long, but then you still find here and there a bit of prejudice, still now. I can walk into this town now, I can go into any club now, and no one wants to say boo to me, because they know that I'll fire back. Because that's the way my mother and father said, do it. But I had to get permission first. In our culture, you're not allowed to say nothing until you're 21. So that took me a long time. Now my mouth is going and it won't stop.
Making up for it.
Making up for it. My father worked his heart off. My father took our money off us. We weren't getting nothing. So my father took the money off us, went to Sydney. Went down to Sydney to get the water on down here at the reserve for all these black people. Then he started that going. Then he came up to town. He did the same thing and he took the money again and started building housing. It was called Inman Housing for the Aboriginal people. He did all that.
What Dad done though, he started the land council. He started the Denman housing. So he was really, really into his black politics, and we grew up with that. Not just here, but his brother in Walgett, Harry Hall, so he'd done all the freedom rights. So all we know is black politics. And
yes.
Dad could never read or write, and he was also then a member of the National Aboriginal Conference, NACC. So he had an office here too. So he actually done a lot of work for Aboriginal people. But no one understands or recognises what these guys have suffered for Dad to do what he done.
The kids at St Bridget's School ask each other about what they'd like to see happening around town.
What would you like to see in Canberra in the future?
I would like to see more opportunities for kids, like arts and stuff for kids that don't particularly like sport.
If you could change something in Canberra, what would you really change?
I would really change the top deck of the pool to a karate dojo.
What do you want to see in Canberra in the future?
I'd like to see more opportunities for kids that don't like doing sport or them activities to have like art classes or something like that.
Would you attend them?
Yes, some of them.
If any personality visited town, who would you want it to be?
If someone visited town, I'd like it to be Luke Coombs because I like his music and I think he's a good singer.
How do you feel on the current state of Canberra?
Well, I feel that it needs a couple things, like basketball, a couple more sports, and for creative people, I think it might need some, I don't know, painting lessons maybe, and yeah.
What do you wish was in Canberra?
Well, personally, I think Canberra needs a lot of improvement, but what I would want currently is maybe a basketball team and something we could do about that in case kids want to play.
In the future, I wish Canberra to grow bigger and have more shops and opportunities for people.
How do you feel that you could make a contribution to Canberra yourself?
Maybe I could talk to people about a basketball competition, maybe some creative things, yeah.
Well, this will be the end of this podcast, Tom. Thanks for being part of it.
Local artist Brian Campbell talks about how his past careers and experiences inspires his sculptures made from wire, netting and steel.
Art's always been there, right through. I put it off until I got older and more settled to do it because, as you know, art, something that you got to have the want and the time to come together, otherwise you're bashing it up against the wall. But, done that. Once we sold the business and that, I went into it a bit stronger. In time, I've had a chop at nearly everything Probably painting is the only thing that I haven't done much of. Now I try and do a bit of burning on timber, clay sculpture, but the main thing at the moment is the netting. Well, I was conned into that for galagan bone for the bullocks. I'd never even looked at doing netting before, and it's just gone on from there. And yeah, the six bullocks, call them the ghost bullocks of the past at galagan bone, out of netting and a reinforcing rod. But they wanted them to depict like a ghost, so they're pretty well see-through, and it's pretty daunting, really. Well, that was, because as soon as I said, right, I'll make one, and then if you like it, we'll keep going. If you don't, we'll find someone else. But I got on the internet to look up how to do it, to learn and all that, and there's just nowhere that you can find people teach you in netting to do it. So I basically had to go at it myself, and still learning, yeah. Probably a bit of feel, and yeah, it's subconscious sort of, yeah, I don't know, a bit hard to explain, but the daunting part is where I'm at with this horse now is you're looking at a steel frame, but you've got to try and visualise where the muscle's going to end, where it's, and it looks very ordinary at the moment, it looks like a half-baked greyhound, and you've got to get over that. And even when you start putting the netting on, like most artworks, you get to a stage where you think it's just crap, it's not going to work, and you've got to work through that, and all of a sudden it'll start to come good, yeah. No, I've never studied any of it. It is a big advantage to have been with horses and cattle and stuff through my life that, it just becomes second nature, like you just know where his knees are or his cannon bone or whatever as you're doing it. You think, well, that's right or it's not right, and yeah, so it is an advantage to have hands on, like to have worked with horses and everything, yeah. Done a bit of droving and a bit of worked on a television series, 5 Mile Creek, about a stagecoach company that started in Sydney and then it moved down to Milton in Melbourne. Gus Mercurio, he was on it. Nicole Kidman, she done a bit on it early. Rod Mulliner, and if there was an actor on a horse, you had to be on a horse and, yeah, be there, but you also had some roles in it, like that you had to be nearly right on the spot, yeah, underneath them on the stagecoach with set of dummy reins. They'd have the dummy reins and you'd have the proper reins in case something went on and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, they wanted me to stay on and do the Anzacs and that, but no, I'd been away long enough. We had a produce and steel business. We ended up going out of the produce. That was horse feed, chook feed and all that sort of stuff, and just concentrating on the steel. And done a little bit of manufacturing, but built the steel right up. It was probably one of the bigger outlets in the West here for quite some time, yeah. Bullocks at Galar, we've got flying pigs at Gilgandra, we've got a ghost soldier up at Charleville, we've got the bandicoot out at Fort Grey, Stuart National Park, and I've just sent Clyde, a big draft horse, up to Mount Tambourine. The project I'm on now is Captain Charles Sturt and his horse. He's walking beside his horse, and it's for the tourism out in Itumbula. So I've done a few of those. Yeah. Each one you do, you think you can do better. I've made a lot of my own tools and stuff, and just evolving all the time, and the day before yesterday I've just started another horse. I had it all tacked up in the motion I wanted him and everything, and I hit the wrong lever on the forklift and smashed him all to pieces, so I had to go again twice. One day it'll work with you, the next day it won't.
Residents at Kunumbal Village catch up for a cuppa and a chat.
Yeah, my name's Beryl Lane. I was born in Kunumbal 93 years ago, and I'm still here and never wanted to go anywhere else really. It was, I loved it.
I stayed here and here I am, and I just love it here.
Yes, it's very good here. We're very lucky to have it.
Got good, really good friends. We have a bit of fun.
We do.
No, it's good.
Yeah, just a place that I just love, and as I said, I've only ever been out of Canamble. Once I went to New Zealand with some golfing friends of mine that I was ready to come home. I liked it, but I was a sook.
Oh,
anyway, that's how I was, but I just think it's a great little town, and I just hope it keeps going.
I love Canamble because I'm here. Anyway,
that works.
And my family came to Canamble in the 1917 something or other, way, way back. Well, I've known Janet since we were at the Canamble.
At the school?
Yes, yeah, St Bridget's School.
And I just love it in here. I came in here and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't have to cook a meal. Thank you.
Kunumbal. Norman.
Every time, well, I'm like, you don't know me, but just as well you don't. But, well, this is what I mean. I used to get into trouble from all the family. Oh, Janet, you've got a weird sense of humour. And Neves and I looked up the word weird. And I don't think we came up with anything different to what we knew before. But we always giggle at the same thing.
When I got here, everyone was talking about being away at boarding school, and they wanted to know where I went to school, and I said, Quambone Ladies' School.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And I never lived that down.
And then my mum used to live on a property on the way to Barradine, the school of Ferndale. Anyhow, she's, you know, learned the law of the house. You've got to be home by such and such, and not a minute before or after, right? Righto. So, anyhow, I heard this story, and it's about my mum, and I think it was 3 o'clock she got home. But I've got to give her the benefit. She was in a horse and sulky.
Okay. Well.
So it took her a while to get back home.
Good times,
though.
Yeah, yes. It was a wonderful
life. I know it was. What else can I say? I knew that I'm wonderful.
Deanne and Min Do own Tong Fong Chinese restaurant on Aberford Street. Let's hear about their incredible journey to this point in their lives.
The long journey, when I talk about before I come to Kunambu, we have to escape from Vietnam to find the freedom after the communists in the country. In the boat, the island called Pulo Bidong. In that time, the policemen, the government, Malaysian government, not accepted the refugee in the land. And we landed there in the small island, 1 square mile, but the population, 42,000. People living there. No drinking water, we have the water from inland.
Yeah, that time we stayed there for 8 months. Then when we come to Malaysia, we only have 2 boys. But on that time when we leaving, we have not a girl.
And very poor. I go to the hospital with the ambulance, special ambulance come to the camp and pick me up. And I not have the baby until 3 o'clock in the morning by myself, not my husband beside me. I can't speak English and can't speak Malaysian. After the baby in the morning, they send me back to camp, no medication.
Then the embassy, Australia embassy in Malaysia, go to interview us, and we are very lucky. In our boat, only one family come to Australia. So we start from there, then we come to Sydney. We live in Sydney for two months, and we try to move in here, try to do something to live on. That's the, we start in Kunambu. Very again, anything is different, and that time I not speak English much, only understand it very little.
Then moving out to a property out at Ferndale, and they lived there and they raised some pigs there. And you worked on the farm for Jack Barrett, didn't you?
But because the drought in 1982, but we can't manage, so we have to sell all the pigs and move into town to looking something to live. And when we get into town, we rent a house and we start the market garden. And the market garden didn't make much money to live in, you know, very hard because we have no equipment, have to pay someone to plow the land. Anyway, 1984, the hailstorm destroyed all the garden, and Min came back and he helped the friend in have the restaurant here.
Yeah, we just learned from there, from the veteran. After then, for until 1985, we got the Trangie Bowling Club.
We go into Trangie Bowling Club.
To cook in there for 2 nights. Then we go to Pig Hill, go club.
To cook in 1 night.
Cook in 1 night on Sunday night, then we drive home.
And every week after school on Friday, I waiting them, the kid in the car, in front of the school and put them in the van. We have the red van. And we drive in Trangie on time, 6 o'clock open. Very little money, but we very appreciate it. We stay there two nights in a caravan. We hire a caravan, drive home straight away after Trangie. We get home about 1 o'clock in the morning sometime from Trangie after finish work, and the kids sleep in the car. And in the morning, they go to school. We do that for 2 years.
Yeah.
And we save up money. Then at the end, in 1987, we bought this business, yes, in Tong Fong restaurant. And we start from there. Min told you before he go to her friend have the Chinese restaurant here, and he learned from them the cooking, because in different country and no, we can't speak English much. We have to learn whatever we can in my skill to do the job, to live on and move on in our life. Kunambu, my home. But my house in Vietnam. The kids, when I go to school, when I teach them, always love a country. If the next life you can, you will be Vietnamese. That's the song I teach them. Mau ta tư thành vang lang dồn lại xương da thịt này cha ông mệt mài từng giờ qua cười ngào nghe đi trên đau nhức không nguôi chúng ta thành một đoàn người hiên ngang trên bàn lòng hát cười đùa vang vang còn Việt Nam chiều con tim thì còn chiều khói kiêu hùng.
Here's a yarn with the school bus driver, Wayne.
Wayne Phillips, born in Kanambu, never left here. Worked at the bowling club for 32 years, president of the Lions Club, been driving the school bus for 16. I love it. Just, you go and pick the kids up, and what I do, I take an interest in them. If they're going away for sports for a day, well, the next day you ask them how they went and everything like this. And I leave here in the morning, I go out 50 k's. They picked up three families at once there. What's this, 3, 9 kids in one go. Then you just come along and pick them up. dropping at their schools and preschools, and check the bus when you finish. There's no kids left on it, or if they left anything behind, we usually take it around the school. Well, I do. Usually, when I get to the end, you could be there 15 or 20 minutes talking to a couple of mums. You know, love Canamble, love my job, I love helping people.
Finally, an historic recording featuring Val Cooner. Here's her son, Pete.
Hello, my name is Peter. I'm one of the four children of Roy and Val Cooner, and this is my mother's story.
Because of my dad's wounded leg, my mother used to have to hop on the horse and go and do the sheep work or bring the sheep in, and he would mind the children. After that, he bought himself a push bike and started exercising on the push bike, which was a big help to his knee. He was the first legatee in Canamble after the Second World War. He was president of the RSL. He used to bring me in when I was about 12 years of age to sell tin hats or poppies, and that's how I have continued doing work for various organisations all my life. My mother used to knit socks for the soldiers, and we used to send parcels with cakes and things to the soldiers overseas. One of the soldiers we wrote to for many, many times was one of the rats of Tobruk, and that was Sergeant Neville West of the 2nd 14th Battalion, and who later became lieutenant in the next one. Corresponded with us till he came back to Australia. My father was always there for us, and as was my mother, so I have had a lot to be helpful for.
Val loved her community. She was president of the Canamble CWA branch and for many years a member of the Anglican Synod for the Bathurst Diocese and a lay preacher at St Barnabas Church in Canamble. She was patroness of Canamble High School and involved with the Red Cross and the local hospital. In her later years, Val was recognised for her community service as Citizen of the Year in the Canamble Shire Australia Day Awards. Val passed away in 2015 and is buried beside her beloved husband Roy in the Canamble Cemetery adjacent to her parents.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au. And you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.